if I were running a lifestyle business and I was happy at my current run rate and didn't want to, if I was more risk averse, I'd potentially keep it as is. If I wanted to grow that business and take it to the next level, I think Vendor Central becomes a lot more interesting.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Joe, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mark. How are you, sir?
Good, good. I heard you explore the depths of the mysterious Vendor Central recently.
Yeah, listen, the good, the bad, the great Amazon sellers that we know that we've talked to over the last decade, for the vast majority, they all say, no way, don't lose control to Vendor Central. Don't do it, don't do it. When you and I went to IRCE in Chicago in 2015, I talked to somebody that was an ex-Amazon Vendor Central manager. He's the first person that ever told me that it was great and that he could double somebody's business using Vendor Central, and I believed them. Him. We never reconnected afterwards. This guest today is the second one. His name is Fahim Naeem. He was an Amazon category manager, and he left and went and started his own company called eShopportunity. And he gave me one example, and this is a huge one. So don't get scared away if you're doing $50,000 a month in revenue, listeners. His first client, he took and quadrupled the revenue in Q4 alone by using Vendor Central tools. So we took it from $4 million a quarter to $16 million by using Vendor Central. Huge growth, huge growth. So that alone is reason enough to listen. And it's firsthand information from somebody that's actually done it and seen it and uses services. And he's quite honest and open about it. It's not for everyone. And it's not take a leap of faith and you're no longer on Seller Central anymore. It used to be that way, and I think that's why people feared it. He's got some great ideas on how to take just one SKU and test it out and slowly move over and things of that nature. All made a whole lot of sense. If I were a seller, if I were a buyer, I would look very, very closely at Vendor Central.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I can't wait to get into this. Before we get into the episode, though, I'm going to make a public plea to the listeners out there. I want to know what conferences you guys go to, because we like to go to conferences. We like to meet you. So send me an email at mark@quietlightbrokerage.com with your favorite conferences to go to throughout the year. And I know that's completely unrelated to what we were just talking about, but you mentioned IRCE and it just sort of triggered that. All right, with that, I'm actually anxious to hear this because like you, I've heard the same sort of feedback from most Amazon sellers. They say, no way, don't want to do it, but it's really hard to ignore quadrupling revenues by jumping over there. So let's get into the episode and hear what he has to say.
Hey folks, it's Joe at Quiet Light Brokerage. And today I've got Fahim Naeem with me on the call today. How are you, Fahim?
Wonderful. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, man. Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast. Listen, you've got a ton of experience from being at Amazon as a category manager and now running eShopportunity. I was going to try to do the intro and talk about you a little bit, but I just want to make sure it's done right. So if you could brag about yourself a little bit, tell everybody that's listening about your experience in the e-commerce world at Amazon and now at eShopportunity, that'd be cool.
Wonderful. I was previously a category manager at Amazon, managed one of the largest categories in Amazon retail, managed a team of vendor managers, and one of the categories in consumer electronics. Super sexy stuff like computer components and peripherals and things that go on your computer. Very exhilarating, as you can tell.
That's exciting, yes.
All jokes aside, was tons of fun. It was over $500 million business. Was able to double the size of my category while I was at Amazon, even though the market was flat. Had a fantastic time, but ultimately made the decision to leave and start my own venture. I started eShopportunity about 3 years back. Wanted to help companies grow and be on the other side of the table of some of those conversations that happened with Amazon. Started off with one initial brand, part-time. We grew his Q4 business from $4 million to $17 million that year, even though his business had been declining. He was excited, introduced me to a couple of other brands. I started scaling the team, and I guess fast forward about 3 years, we've worked with over 100 brands to date. Some Fortune 500 brands, some brands we've seen on Shark Tank, a bunch of startups and companies in between. Either brands that have been on Amazon for a while, but really wanted to take it to the next level. Brands that have had successful businesses off of Amazon and finally wanted to launch on Amazon, or a variety of other variants of the type.
That's an impressive resume. You took somebody from 4 million to 17 million and he was only excited. I would think he'd be ecstatic.
He was probably more excited when we weren't on the phone. I think he did a good job keeping his poker face, but I'd imagine based off of his expectations. When we started, he threw a pie in the sky number saying, if you help me grow to 20 million this quarter, that would be beyond real. And I was pretty angry that we fell just short of it. So my take was probably a little bit different than his. I was hoping that we could get to 20. And again, his Q4 business the previous year was it was about flat to where he was that year. So it was he had some phenomenal growth. And the good news is that after I checked in, whenever the project concluded, the business had continued to grow. So I think a lot of Amazon is, how do you set the right foundation? How do you get the things clicking? And then organically, if you're doing the right things and you're not screwing up, which is probably easier said than done, you see that your business continues to scale, which is obviously great from a business owner standpoint.
Right. Now, you mentioned you managed a team of vendors, and Mark and I talked in the intro about Vendor Central. You and I are here to talk today mostly about Vendor Central and your expertise in that area and why some people should start paying attention to it. As I told you, I don't think I've talked to a single Amazon seller that has a seller account, whether they're doing $50,000 a month or $1 million or two or three or $4 million a month in revenue. They all say, there's no way I'm giving up control to Vendor Central. Absolutely not. And there's a huge paranoia about it. The only time I've ever heard that it's a good thing is from you and from someone else that I met at IRCE in 2015. Tell us, if you will, with the basics, what's the difference between Seller Central and Vendor Central? And then let's get into the details of Vendor Central and who's a good candidate for it and how you can help somebody grow their business by using it, or how anybody that chooses to use it can use the cheat sheet that you and I have talked about that we're going to share in the notes for them to go ahead and do it themselves if they want to go that route. The difference between the two is...
Well, first off, Vendor Central is often treated as a redheaded stepchild. People are not very optimistic based off of what they've heard in these seller communities, especially. I'm in the forums, I speak at conferences, I do a fair amount of publishing, and I've similarly heard a couple of things. One is, I think there's some misinformation that hopefully we will dispel at least to a certain degree during this podcast. And some of it is probably warranted. I think the decision between Seller Central and Vendor Central depends so much on the specific details of that brand that anybody who says, hands down, this platform is better than that platform, is probably doing you a disservice in that Seller Central certainly has some benefits. Vendor Central has some benefits. Fact of the matter is, most of the largest brands or the businesses that are doing the most amount of volume on Amazon are on Vendor Central. So it seems to be working for people that are growing very quickly and have larger businesses. Yes, there's probably some bias in it that a lot of those are large companies anyways and are Fortune 500 brands that sell across the board. But I can't tell you the number of times we've taken a brand and got their business from, let's say, a couple hundred thousand, $200,000 or $300,000 on Seller Central per month, and got that business to grow 3 or 4x when they made the transition to Vendor Central, when all things align. Things don't always align. Again, the devil's in the details, and we'll get to that. But there is certainly an opportunity if you want to scale your business and become a 5, 10, 15, $20 million brand on Amazon and more. Vendor Central offers you a set of tools that are much tougher to get to than Seller Central, or possibly not even available to Seller Central. So to answer your question more specifically, Seller Central, you do have more control, direct control of the pricing and inventory. Seller Central is starting to open up some of the things that used to be available just to vendors, things like A-plus content, lightning deals, best deals, headline search. So certainly there's a little bit more parity coming to the seller part of the world. But when you sell your products directly to Amazon wholesale, a couple of things. One is, it's not you sell to Amazon and they take care of the rest of it. It's very similar to Seller Central in that you get a toolkit that you can use to grow your business, but it's not Amazon's going to optimize your pages. Amazon's going to run all these ads for you. Amazon's going to give you higher search results and figure out what the right pricing is for you and run promotions by themselves, et cetera. Vendor Central is very similar to Seller Central in that it's how much you put into it. And you have access to tools on Vendor Central in many cases that you may not have access to on Seller Central. For example, let's talk about deals. Lightning deals on Seller Central are recommended only. And even that just became available in the last year or two. As a vendor, you can submit a proposal. It doesn't mean it will always get approved, but you can submit and be a lot more proactive on Lightning Deal and Vendor Central. There's something called Best Deals, which most people on Seller Central don't have access to unless you have an account manager. That's the idea that you show up on Today's Deals page, which is the most popular page on Amazon after the homepage, and you can run a deal for up to 2 to even 4 weeks with a less aggressive discount than a Lightning Deal. In many cases, Best Deals has been phenomenal for brands that we work with. That's another option. Coupons just became available to Seller Central a couple of months ago. That had been a popular program that many vendors have utilized for a long time. Subscribe and Save, again, started on Vendor Central before it became available on Seller Central. Programs like Amazon Prime Now, Amazon Fresh, Prime Pantry are primarily, not exclusively, focused on vendor-facing brands. So that's another example. If you want to be on the homepage of the furniture page on Amazon, so if you go to navigation, click on Amazon Furniture, Amazon Computers, Components, and Peripherals, and there's a lot of people who search for products that way. Most of those placements are available for vendors only. If you want to be on gift guides, and Amazon has done a great job over the last couple of years building some excitement over this idea of having a holiday gift guide, we can browse through products. Because Amazon obviously has been a great place to shop if you know what you want. It hasn't been ideal if you want to browse for things. And Amazon's tried to tackle that. Most, if not all, the brands and many of the gift guides are vendors. So again, there's a unique set of tools that vendors have access to. That said, it's certainly not all rosy. Things get a lot more complicated. You have a little bit less direct control on inventory. You get a weekly purchase order that Amazon cuts every week, and that's the amount that you can send. You can't send more. You could send less, although that's probably not a good idea unless you don't have inventory.
So holding on right there in terms of that inventory, because I know as people are listening to us, they've probably written down 20 questions they're hoping I ask. Let's just talk about that inventory for a minute. So many Amazon Seller Central folks send money to inventory directly from their manufacturer to Amazon. In this case, do Vendor Central folks have to have a 3PL where they store the inventory in between and ship on a regular basis?
That's what most people do. There are some variants where you can get around that. Amazon on the Vendor Central side has a direct import program where you can import all of your inventory likely from Asia directly to Amazon. Not the easiest thing in the world to set up, to be transparent, but certainly exists and know some brands that have done well with that. I'd say the vast majority of brands on Vendor Central either have their own 3PL or use a separate 3PL to fulfill those orders. And in some cases, you can do a little bit of both. You can have some inventory in multiple warehouses, and you get POs from different warehouses, and you have to send it to different places. So there is some level of flexibility, although it tends to get a lot more complicated on how this process works in Seller Central. Seller Central, I want to send 500 units. I go on, create a shipment. It'll tell me what FCs I want to use. I even have the option to do inventory placement service to send it to just one FC, and I'm done. And then Amazon manages all the intra FC shipments. Vendor Central doesn't
use FC being fulfillment center, right?
Correct. On the Vendor
Central. On the Vendor Central.
Yeah, no, that's good. Stop me because I live in the acronym world.
So okay.
It's good to get clarity. On Vendor Central, when you get a weekly purchase order or PO, they could have you send it to 8 or 9 FCs, and sometimes less, sometimes more. So the process, again, works a little differently. For some brands, that's not a big deal. And for some brands, that's probably a little bit more complex than they want to be, especially early on in the life cycle of the business.
Okay. So you just used the word brands. This is an assumption. Maybe everybody already knows this or is thinking this, but Vendor Central is really for brands, not resellers. Simple?
Yes and no. I'd say primarily most of the companies that are on there are brands. There are a good number of distributors that also have Vendor Central accounts. Most of the large distributors, or many of the large distributors, have Vendor Central accounts, and they supply directly to Amazon. And even if you are a brand, meaning manufacturer, and you sell to Amazon, if Amazon can source your product cheaper through a distributor, they'll buy from the distributor in many cases.
Interesting.
And that sometimes pisses off brands. But yes, you, it could be either in the context of a lot of things I'm talking about. I'm probably talking more down the brand manufacturer route. But you, to answer your question, you could be a distributor and have a Vendor Central account, and you could be the company that's fulfilling purchase orders for a variety of different brands through the distributor. I know some distributors that are doing 10, 20, 30 different vendors. They're fulfilling inventory for 10, 20, 30 different vendors that are not exactly their brand.
Well, the fear that I think a lot of the brand owners have that I speak with is that they lose control. And going back to that, you mentioned it, they don't lose control. They still have control. They can they write their copy? Can they work on their keywords? Can they send organic traffic to it? Can they, and then do all of those discounts and promotions you talked about as well? Is it essentially Seller Central on steroids, where they've just got access to more things?
I like that. I like this Seller Central on steroids. I may steal that, actually. Yes, it's. I would argue you probably have more control on Vendor Central than Seller Central. So it is a common myth. Very often, even if you're a brand registered on Seller Central, I hear it all the time. Brands say, somebody changed my copy, somebody changed my picture, somebody changed my variation. Even if you are the brand owner and you're on Seller Central, there's a brand hierarchy in terms of who owns detail page edits. And at the top of the list is vendors. So anybody who has a Amazon Vendor Central account has ultimate authority over what goes on. Even if you are the brand owner and you have a Seller Central account and you have brand registry, if the distributor is selling that to Amazon and they have a vendor account, they actually have ownership over that page copy, in most cases, over the brand that's on Seller Central. So I'd say you can change titles, you can change bullets, you can update images. It actually works much easier on Vendor Central than Seller Central. Seller Central, sometimes doing things like variations can be fairly complex, and Vendor Central can be as easy as a ticket and somebody will do it for you. Images, similarly, the turnaround time on Vendor Central is pretty good. But ultimately, I'd say you have at least as much control, probably more control over your page copy and content and branding on Vendor Central than Seller Central.
And then all of the other things that Seller Central folks do, whether it's driving outside traffic, keyword optimization, discounts, reviews, YouTube, social media reviewers that are, you know, talking about it and driving traffic to that Amazon page. They can do the same thing. It's just an Amazon vendor page, correct?
Correct. Yep. Correct. You can do all that. And to the average customer, they can't tell the difference of vendor versus seller. Okay. Most people don't even realize it. So yes, right. It works the same way. You can send external traffic. You can run discounts. You can run promotions. Almost the same. In most cases, the same way. So essential.
We've got people that, you know, if they're doing $1 million a month and running a lifestyle business, meaning they've got some VAs and they work from home part-time, they don't want to really risk very much. You know, there's no sense in going, I'm going to just lose that million a month and I'm going to jump into Vendor Central. Tell us about, if they're doing Seller Central, what the leap is from Seller Central to Vendor Central. Do they have to shut down the seller account and then open Vendor, or can they have both running simultaneously? Is it a one-way street? Talk to us from that perspective, as if you were that guy, you know, running a lifestyle business, you know, making $1 million in revenue on a monthly basis.
A couple of things. If I were running a lifestyle business and I was happy at my current run rate and didn't want to, if I was more risk averse, I'd potentially keep it as is. If I wanted to grow that business and take it to the next level, I think Vendor Central becomes a lot more interesting.
What's the risk part in terms of vendor versus seller? You said risk.
Well, you know,
more riskier.
Yeah. If you're risk averse, you already know what to expect. You know how to manage everything as the current process dictates on Seller Central. When you transition to vendors, things change, typically for the better if everything aligns. But the way pricing works changes, the way pricing works certainly changes, the way inventory fulfillment works changes, et cetera, et cetera. At the end of the day, once you get onboarded, and in most cases, not all cases, but in most cases, if you do a good job negotiating with your vendor manager, which we'll talk about in a couple seconds, I'd imagine, on your terms, and you are not paying net much more in Vendor Central than Seller Central, I think there's a little bit less risk. If you are going into a category where your net margin expectations from Amazon is severely higher on Vendor Central versus Seller Central, there could be some risk that at the same amount of volume, Amazon's taking a bigger cut of that. So I think there are some nuances, but I'd say the risk is the unknown, and it's a new process, and you have to manage that.
And do you have to shut down your seller account or to open the Vendor Central? Obviously, that it's not you lose days or weeks of revenue. I would assume that it's very seamless.
It's semi-seamless. Amazon has changed their stance on this over the last couple of years. A couple of years ago, it was almost taboo to say you have both a vendor and seller central account. And in many categories now, and the vendor manager technically has the ability to shut down your Seller Central account if they wanted to. If you were doing anything to really damage your Vendor Central business, there's officially a clause that says if you sell wholesale and you have a vendor account, that they can shut down your Seller Central account. I actually haven't seen that happen, although I've seen some threats, but that exists for a couple of good reasons. In the last couple of years, vendor managers and teams at Amazon have been a lot more open to the idea of having both, but being strategic about it. The idea is the vendor manager owns the retail, what they would call the retail part of the business, and Seller Central is almost a competitor to that vendor manager. And they do that to keep more competition on the platform, so better for the customer at the end of the day. So the vendor manager doesn't get a lot of benefit when you have a Seller Central account. If you're competing on the same SKU and you have lower prices than the Seller Central, it actually hurts this person's metrics. They're out of stock. Their lost buy box, a bunch of their metrics of sales are going to be a lot lower here. What many brands do is they do it a little bit more strategically, where they say, I'm going to have both the vendor and the Seller Central account. I'm going to do some SKUs on Vendor Central to start. I'm going to keep some SKUs on Seller Central to start, see how that process goes. Depending on how close that brand is with the vendor manager, that person may push to get more and more of the catalog from Seller Central to Vendor Central. But think of this like you're negotiating with a buyer at Walmart or Best Buy or Target. There is a lot of negotiations that goes back and forth. So maybe you decide that it's not a good idea to transition your entire catalog, or maybe things are going so well and you want to do everything overnight. I think that's where it's a very personal decision. But many brands, the way they start is they open a Vendor Central account, get a couple of SKUs on Vendor Central, get used to the process, and things work a little differently. One thing we should mention is pricing, because a lot of people worry, and I hear this misconception a lot, that Amazon will lower your pricing, you lose control over it. It's not really true. What Amazon's pricing, and there's certain things that I'm allowed to say and not allowed to say. Ultimately, Amazon's not in the game of, let's proactively lower your price so we can sell more inventory and create a price war in the market. That's not Amazon's idea. That's actually what a lot of other retailers do, and I can tell you firsthand, many other big box retailers like to put things on rollback and promotion and discount pricing. Amazon Vendor Central, if you have control over your pricing in the market, so externally and third-party wise, there's nobody undercutting your price, you have a lot more control over pricing than many people think.
In most of the cases, I think the people listening to this podcast, they own their brand and they do not sell it to distributors. So it's not going to be an issue. They're the sole person or company selling that brand. You know, they're going to get their wholesale price from Amazon anyway. It doesn't really matter if Amazon decides to sell it for $2 above. They're still going to get their wholesale price from Amazon, correct?
Yes, but it's a dangerous way to look at it because let's walk through an example. Let's say you're selling the gross sales price, so the MSRP, or the price the customer pays, is $20. And I'm just making up some numbers. The price that you sell it to Amazon is $16, net of all costs and whatnot. If you then have somebody selling your product on third party, or let's say externally at Target, you have a small assortment, but Target decides to lower that to $18, or let's call it $17. Amazon will match this $17 likely. And in your mind, you may say, you know what, it doesn't matter. Amazon paid me.
Well, no, it matters because they're not going to buy any from you again. Obviously, it has to be profitable.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, what I was referring to was that most of the people I think listening to this podcast are not selling to Target and Walmart retail big boxes at this point. I really like the idea I just want to repeat it, that you don't have to take a leap of faith from Seller Central to Vendor Central, that you pick a couple of SKUs and you test Vendor Central with that. And you talked about negotiating with Vendor Central. Do you actually get to talk to a live person and have that one person as your contact? You're chuckling. For those that are not watching this on YouTube, he smiled and he looked up to the left going, oh my God, could I tell you some stories, I think. Don't, but is it a human that you get to talk to, or is it email?
It depends. Like with everything else, it depends. There is a human that lives behind the desk that ultimately manages that, and the team that manages that. It depends on if you're able to get a hold of that person. So sometimes the vendor manager is a lot more proactive, especially for brands that have a larger business, whether on Seller Central or externally, and the vendor manager or somebody on that team reaches out and you have that direct line of contact. Sometimes people find the vendor manager buyer on LinkedIn and they start a relationship with that person that way. Sometimes they'll leverage consultants and agents and people like myself to get a hold of that buyer and broker a meeting and start some of those conversations. And many times the invite comes from a separate team. You get onboarded to Vendor Central and your business is not large enough in the eyes of the buyers where you're going to get a whole lot of time and attention. And you're often told to use Vendor Central's tools and file tickets to get answers. So it does depend on the brand. Some of the brands that we work with, some of the larger brands or brands that have more potential have better chances of getting some of that one-on-one relationship with the buyers. And some brands, especially when they're earlier on and their business isn't fully at scale from an Amazon perspective, they're often told to use Vendor Central file tickets and try to leverage some of the automated processes that exist. So
let's talk about
it's
that.
Possible.
Let's talk about thing. That then. 2 points. Number one, I want to hear your top negotiating tactic with Vendor Central that you want to share with people today. Number two, maybe start with number two, size-wise. When how big does a brand have to be in terms of, let's just say that I'm going to peel off a couple of SKUs again. What kind of revenue does that have to be producing in Seller Central to make a difference to the point when I can actually negotiate your top negotiating tactic? So if somebody's doing $50,000 a month, is that enough? If they're doing 25, is that enough? Do they need to be doing 100? What's the number?
It differs so wildly by category, as you can imagine. I'd say generally, a lot of times I've heard the benchmark gross sales you want to be doing. If you're doing over $1 million or dollars a year, that'll probably get the attention of the vendor manager. Again, it differs. If you're in a category, a huge consumer electronics category, that number may need to be 5 million annual gross sales. If you're in a growing category, if you're in health and personal care, if you're in grocery, if you're in fashion, that number may end up being even lower than $1 million. But I would say if you're doing less than a couple $100,000 annually on Amazon, there's probably a lot of low-hanging fruit to scale your business on Seller Central initially. If you're already doing north of $1 million+ annually on Amazon, then it depends on your category, depends on your ranking and how big you are as a portion of that catalog. But certainly the bigger your business, the higher the likelihood that you're going to get the ear and the attention of that vendor manager. If you're doing some $10 million annually in almost any category, the vendor manager should, not always does, but should want to convert your business, figure out how they can scale your business. And they have tools, again, that you wouldn't have in the Seller Central business. So they really could, if they wanted to, help you grow that $10 million business to be 15 or 20 million fairly quickly. Versus doing that on Seller Central, certainly possible, but it's almost like you have one hand behind your back because you don't have access to the same set of tools.
All right. Tell me about the negotiating tactics. You and I have talked about you're going to create a little cheat sheet that's in the notes for people to download in terms of top negotiating tactics with Vendor Central. Can you give me one or two that we can share with folks? And I know it's going to depend upon the category and all that, but throw something out there.
Take them to dinner. Take them to dinner. When you go to Amazon, in all seriousness, you want to create a relationship with that person and treat it like if you were sitting from their side, what do you want to hear? So it's less complaining and demanding. It's more, this is what I've been able to do so far. I know you have the tools to help me really grow this business. I want my brand to be a part of your business.
You're not going to say what I tell every buyer, which is just be likable. The more likable you are, the more people are going to work with you. Is this part of the secret sauce to be likable?
I think that's certainly some part of it. I mean, I think in the context of the conversation, put yourself in their shoes again. And why should they? This person literally has thousands of brands that technically fall under them. Why should they spend some time trying to invest in you? And being likable is certainly part of it. Explaining why your brand has a big opportunity, whether that's your growth rate, on Amazon, whether that's things that you've done off of Amazon, whether that's new products that are coming out, whether that's press and things that you've been able to capture externally, make them care. The more they care about it, and certainly it helps to be likable, although that's not always the case, the more that person is going to want to invest in it. This person literally has to make there's not enough hours in the day for the vendor manager to keep everybody happy. And I know now, being on both sides of the table, how difficult that job can be. And it can be very frustrating from a brand's perspective. But every day as a vendor manager, you have to pick who are the 95% of people I'm going to piss off by not answering them or giving them the time of day, just because they have so many things going on. And by creating a relationship, by understanding what they need, by taking care of the easy things yourself and not bothering them with things that you can complete by yourself by filing tickets on Vendor Central, you're certainly going to increase the chances that person's going to invest in you. If they feel like their time on the phone with you or in meetings or doing annual planning meetings in Seattle or meeting at trade shows is valuable, and they're actually helping you grow the business, they're going to want to invest more. If most of the time you're talking to them, it's about, I filed this ticket and it's not working, or can you help me with this bank account issue, or I can't figure out why this super tactical thing is not working, that person's, again, going to be stretched so thin. The answer is probably going to be file a ticket, reach out to somebody in Vendor Central anyways. So I think the more you can keep the picture on the long term and understand there's going to be some bumps along the road, the better the chances that buyer is going to want to invest in this relationship. So nothing, no silver bullet, except for be likable, think about long term, think about it from that person's perspective.
Got it. Geographically, where are you located?
In San Francisco, and spend my time in Texas as well. So between San Francisco and Texas.
And the vendor central managers, are they all up in Seattle? Are they located around the country? Where
for the most part. Most of the vendor managers are in Seattle. Yep.
Okay. And if someone wants to learn the basics of Vendor Central to make sure that, you know, they're understanding it as much as they can, is Vendor Central on Amazon.com the best resource and knowledge base to learn the basics of it? Or is there another resource that you'd suggest?
So there's certainly less, and this is a little bit frustrating, I think, for brands. There's less information about Vendor Central than there is for Seller Central externally. There's a lot of tutorials. There's a lot of training. There's a lot of information. There's Seller Central forums, et cetera, that exists for Seller Central and not a lot for Vendor Central. There is a lot of information on Vendor Central. If you get an invite, the help section has tons and tons of guides. It's probably not feasible to go through all the different guides, so it's a little bit trial by fire. I would certainly spend a little bit more time on the operations and figuring out how inventory management works, and if you want EDI support, and what that looks like, and managing that part of the process early on and getting a feel for it. There are some pretty good documents on Vendor Central again, but they're pretty long and exhaustive. So I think you have to scour Vendor Central support, talk to other brands that are on Vendor Central potentially, talk into the vendor manager, and kind of just learn by doing. The good news is
sounds like there's an e-course in the making here. Somebody should be creating a program on teaching Vendor Central.
Yep.
And you and I get a royalty for that, right? No, it's just an
idea. I like the idea.
Just an idea. Okay. This is just a theory, but I want to hear what you would say. And this is really not just for sellers, but it's for buyers of Amazon businesses. We're running short on time, so I'm going to just, you know, say I'm launching a listing. This is all theory, quote unquote, for air quotes for those not watching. It's going out next week. The brand has been around for about 3 years, growing quite rapidly. There's 12 SKUs and 60 variations, doing about $1.3 million in revenue in the trailing 12 months. And there's a design patent on the product as well. Seller Central only. I'm going to come to you, or I'm going to try to figure out Vendor Central myself. It's in a category of, well, I can't really say what it's in, but it's not in a massive category with tons and tons of competition. Is this something that you'd look at me if we were having a beer right now? You say, Joe, you're nuts not to look at Vendor Central.
Potentially. I think it's certainly within your interest to evaluate it. So maybe you're nuts if you're not thinking about it and evaluating. Not necessarily that it's the right decision, but you need to start doing your homework to figure out if it is. And the interesting thing is, it may not be right now. It may be next year, or it may be 6 months from now. But I think if you simply wrote it off and say, it seems too complicated, I don't want to do it, then I would say you're nuts. If you said, I looked at it, here's the pros, here's the cons. Ultimately, Seller Central makes a lot more sense than I think you're doing exactly what you should do.
What's the first step in evaluating it?
Getting the invite. So Vendor Express used to exist, and fortunately that platform is retiring, I think this month. It was the idea that you can sign up as anybody can sign up to be a vendor on Amazon through this Vendor Express platform, and you get a lot of the same tools, not everything, but a lot of the same tools as Vendor Central. Vendor Central is an invite-only platform, so you need to get an invite from somebody at Amazon, whether that's your category manager, or there's a selection team, or somebody who lives within that retail team. So it's tough to get a lot of information until you actually get that invite, because when it comes down to what's your total margin, what is this going to look like, what's your payment terms, you don't get that information until you get the invite. So I'd say the first step is starting to figure out who your vendor manager is and starting to have some conversations. Before that, I think you could probably do some level of research and see other brands in your category, how many of them are vendors, how many of them are sellers. If you are continuously being ranked in the top 20, but never in the top 10 for your category, you should be looking at who those top 20 are on a regular basis. What are the brands? What are the SKUs? What are they doing that you're not doing? And if you find 80% of them seem to be vendors and they have access to much better A+ content than you have and videos, and they're all over holiday gift guides, and you see them all over today's deals page, and they're getting deals of the day, and they're on Amazon Prime Refresh and whatnot, then I'd certainly be keeping that in mind. If you look at the list and say, nobody's doing any of that, everybody has the same tools as me, maybe you come out and say, I'm not getting hurt, or maybe you say there is an opportunity to further go. So I guess prior to getting the invite and having the conversation, certainly wanting to understand what your dynamics are. I've seen categories like luxury beauty, for example, where the vast majority of brands that are growing are vendors. And it's, again, because of a variety of different tools that they have access to that are not on the Seller Central side. So in that category, if you're a brand that wanted to do north of $1 million or $2 million a year, I would probably very heavily consider Vendor Central and start looking into the process and figuring out who the buyer is and what can I offer and how do I get a hold of them and what would this look like, for example. So I think, unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of prep and information out there on exactly what your margins and your would be ahead of time and some of those other details and how much inventory they're going to order or anything like that until you actually get the invite. So I guess the first process is research. Second process is find out who your vendor manager or where you can get an invite.
Yeah, if you can find out who your vendor manager is through LinkedIn or however, you might be able to strike up communications and get that invite if need be. This may be a simple question, but how do I look at Amazon and find a competitor and tell if they're Seller Central or Vendor Central? Is it an obvious way?
So if you go onto a listing and you look under the price, there's three different options that you'll see. One of them says ships from and sold by Amazon.com. One of them will say sold by ABC and fulfilled by Amazon.com. And the third one will say ships from and sold by ABC.com.
Gotcha.
The third one where it says ships from and sold is the seller who's also doing their own fulfillment. Most cases are not Prime eligible unless they're on Seller Fulfilled Prime. The second option when it says sold by ABC.com and fulfilled by Amazon means they're a seller that's suing FBA. And the first one that says ships from and sold by Amazon.com means that Amazon's buying that. In most cases, that means that brand has a Vendor Central account. But again, there could be a case where the brand actually doesn't sell to Amazon, but a distributor does. But either way, that is what they would call retail or vendor inventory, because it ships from and sold by Amazon.com. And a final tidbit is there's been a lot of research done that shows that it differs by category, but customers have more trust when it's just ships from and sold by Amazon.com. And conversion can be significantly higher even than an FBA listing. Certainly, both a retail and FBA listing would have higher conversion than something that's not Prime eligible, assuming it's not SFP. But in some categories, I've heard the conversion can be 30 to 50% higher, all else equal, for something that says ships from and sold by Amazon.com. Not all customers understand the difference, but people are becoming a little bit more savvy. And if you're on the fence and you say, I've never heard of this brand, but if Amazon's buying it, it's a little bit easier. Returns work a little bit easier because the brand doesn't even need to get involved. I can just reach out to Amazon customer service. sometimes that's the difference maker when somebody's making decisions.
I hadn't even thought of that conversion rate bump. I mean, 30-40%, maybe that's just, even if you divide by four and you get a 10% bump, that's a pretty big bump for a lot of people that are listening today. Well, listen, Fahim, you've been great. We're running out of time. I know you're going to put together a cheat sheet for negotiating with Vendor Central. Maybe you can throw in some links there for any place that people can learn about Vendor Central. You'll share some details about each opportunity as well. And how do people find you if they are listening to this now and are driving down the street and they don't want to go to the notes? How do they find you right now?
Probably the easiest way is going on eachopportunity.com, and there's a contact us form. I also do go to a bunch of conferences, so oftentimes I meet and talk to brands there. I'll be at IRCE. I'm the chairman of the Amazon conference for this year, so I'll be around all day. So if anybody would rather have a conversation in person, that's certainly possible as well.
Fantastic, man. You've been great. I appreciate it. You've cleared up a lot of things. I think a lot of people are going to ask a lot more questions and hopefully look at Vendor Central more realistically, both sellers of businesses and those that are investing in them to help take it to the next level. Appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks, Joe. Wonderful time. Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.